You're listening to a free bonus episode of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you'd like to listen to an extended version of the weekend podcast, as well as a midweek episode, please click on the link to Membership Plus in the episode notes. Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Sweden in Focus, in which we chat to the Centre Party leader, Muharrem Demirok, about where his party stands in Swedish politics, why they're struggling at the moment, what it's like being a party leader from a multicultural family, how he reacts to anti-Muslim sentiment in Swedish politics, and why he's opposed to the government's plans to raise the income requirement for work permits. I'm Paul O'Mahony, and asking the questions with me in Stockholm is James Savage. Before we get into the interview, James, can you just give us some brief background on the Centre Party and their place in Swedish politics?
Well, the Centre Party, Centerpartiet, it's a bit of a political chameleon, you might say. So this sprung from the old Farmers' Party, Bondeförbundet, as it was called in Swedish. Mm. And that meant, as you would expect, they traditionally represented Swedish farmers and countryside interests. And this meant that they had their strongholds in rural areas, many in the north of Sweden, but also other parts. But over time, they've tried to diversify and appeal to other groups, not least because the number of people working in agriculture has fallen dramatically over the last century or so. And what they've done is they've pursued more sort of liberal economic policies with low taxes and a pro-business slant. So this has put the past couple of decades very much on the centre-right of politics, and they've sat in government with the moderates, as well as the Liberals and Christian Democrats, and they did that between 2006 and 2014. But as their name suggests, they think of themselves as a party of the middle, and they've been at odds with the centre-right parties over the last few years, particularly over questions like immigration, well, particularly immigration in and of itself, where they are much more liberal. And they haven't glided over towards the sort of Sweden Democrat side of things on immigration, like some of the others have. And they've supported Social Democrat governments over the past few years and have refused to work in coalition with the Sweden Democrats. So now they're outside the government, in opposition, and it's kind of assumed that they would support the Social Democrats as the next government. Mm. My favourite fact about the Centre Party, though, is that they are Sweden's richest political party. In fact, they're one of Europe's richest political parties. And this is thanks to the sale of their local newspaper group about two decades ago. So they now have assets of over €1 billion.
Wow.
It's a lot of money. And this gave them the second biggest campaign budget at the last election. So they invest this and they use the return on the investment to finance their activities. But then the question is whether this money makes much difference. They got just less than 7% at the last election.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And in the polls, they're now somewhere around 4-5%. So this is a long shot from their former highs. Back in the 70s, they were the biggest centre-right party at times, and there was even a centre-party prime minister. There's no real prospect of that now.
Okay, thanks, James. Let's listen now to the conversation we had with the centre-party leader, Muharrem Demirok. Can we start by asking you a little bit about yourself? What was your upbringing like?
I was born and raised here in Stockholm. Stockholm was a different city than it is today. It was still a big city, but also a very small city. Something very different than it is today. And I was born and raised in Huddinge kommun and lived when I was a kid in a place called Vårbygård. It was the best upbringing you can have as a kid. Vårbygård is a place built during the 70s with the ideals that they had there. No cars in this area, only residences, houses, and green areas. So we could just take our bike and just cycle around, and we were the freest kids in the world. The best game we knew, me and my friends, it was to just get on our bikes and get lost. just cycle around and experience new places. We were curious. And I still wonder how our parents managed that. There were no phones. We just went out and said, we're going out. And then we came back a couple of hours later. If mom asked us where we had been, I don't know. We just got lost and we experienced new places and met new people. So it was a very, very safe upbringing.
Could you say that? Because we're talking, you met Vårby Gård now, when people think, when a Stockholmer hears Vårby Gård.
It's something else.
I mean, the Vårby Nätverket was one of the big criminal gangs. That's one of the most notorious criminal gangs in Sweden. Did you see any of this when you were growing up there? Did you feel any of this? At what point did this change?
I remember one time when Carl Bildt was prime minister in Sweden, it was the first time we were talking about certain areas as difficult. He mentioned a couple of areas in Stockholm as ghettos, and Vårby Gård was one of them. And I remember how me and my friend just looked in the newspaper and saw Vårby Gård is a ghetto. And I was like, what? What's he talking about? For us, it was the safest place, the best place in the world. It took us by surprise. We were young then. We were just 14, 15 years old. But I still remember how it took us by surprise. But after that, I looked at Vårby Gård from a different perspective. Because if other people saw us as a ghetto, why did they do that? So I started seeing other things. And I realized that Vårby Gård is very close to the city center in Stockholm. It's very close to the parliament. But it's still very, very far away from all the decisions. Everything that was decided was decided over our heads. No one spoke to us. Everyone spoke about us, but never with us. That was a wake-up call for me. So close, but so far away from everything. And something happened during the early 2000s in Sweden and in Stockholm. You had criminal gangs coming in and becoming stronger. And one thing that I realized when it comes to Vårby Nätverket is that I used to train a couple of those guys when I was a football trainer. My younger brother played football in a football team in Vårby Gård, Vårby Gård GF. And looking back at that, I know that a couple of guys in that football team became members of Vårby Nätverket. Two guys are dead. They don't live anymore. Young kids, the finest kids ever. And they got murdered for nothing, for just getting in a conflict with other people. And they just got murdered. And it's difficult to, when you look back and then seeing that the safest place in the world became something else. And kids playing in the same football team. My brother is a lawyer now, and many of the kids have great lives now. And some of them are lawyers, some of them are doctors, but some of them became gang members, and some of them don't live today. Same upbringing, same area. Very different fates. So it's hard to look back in that. And I still have my parents living in Vårby Gård, and I go there a lot. I try to eat dinner as often as I can with my parents.
You feel safe there?
I want to feel safe. I know everything. I can walk in a block, and when a smell hits you, you just go back 35, 40 years and you're a kid again. The memories are so fresh still from that smell or that sound or anything. And in Sweden, we call it Mamma's Gata. It's my mother's street. It's like my upbringing is there. I know every inch of Vårby Gård. So I want to feel safe, but it's hard to feel safe sometimes. It's hard to realize that people have been shot, being killed. There's drug dealers in every corner, police patrolling all the streets. It's helicopters and drones flying over Vårby Gård all the time. You want to feel safe. You want to have that feeling you had as a kid. But at the same time, you realize it's not safe all the time. And the worst thing is that I can leave. I can eat my dinner and I can leave Vårby Gård. A lot of people are stuck there. They don't have the ability to leave. They don't have the incomes. It's hard to find a flat in another suburb in Stockholm. It's hard to leave. And if you don't have the income, if you don't have the job, you're stuck there. And you have to live with the insecurity all the time. And those are the people that are the most vulnerable. Those are the ones that gets in their hands for these predators. But that's what I see these gang members as well. Even if I trained them, they became stone cold murderers and they become predators. So you have to treat predators in a certain way. Even if you've known them for a long time, they have to be put behind bars. They have to be locked up. Otherwise, they will just keep hunting.
You talked about the way that politicians have spoken about Vorby Gård. And you were saying, you know, even when you were a teenager, Carl Bildt, was that a factor in getting you into politics? What made you want to get into politics and become a Centerpartist?
When I look back at it, it's a long way to becoming a politician. And the one that really pushed me into politics, it was, I used to live in a dorm in Linköping, and it was a British exchange student called Dean Cairns. If you hear me, Dean, I won't never forget you.
Fine, Dean.
We became good friends, and one day we're sitting and having coffee, and I've always been interested in politics. I come from a very political home. And I was talking about politics and said, Muharrem, you know what? I don't want to hear anything more. Just stop. You always talk about politics. Can we talk about something else? Girls, parties, whatever. Stop talking politics. I don't want to hear anymore. You should become a politician. Join a political party. And I just looked at him and said, you know what, Dean? I'm going to do that. I'm going to join a political party. And that's when my real search after a political home started. I've always been interested in politics. I've always talked about politics. But it was after his push that I really came out and said, I'm going to join a political party. I'm going to do my democratic duty.
Why does a kid from Vorby Gård gravitate towards the Centre Party? I mean, Centre Party was traditionally an agrarian party. But who's it for these days? What's its role in Swedish politics?
Well, that was my first thought as well when I first opened my eyes for Centerpartiet. This is not for me. And it took almost a year for me to come out of the Center Party closet. I knew I wasn't left and I knew I wasn't right. I was somewhere in the middle. And when I started my search, I found Center Party really fast. Because what I started with saying that Vorby Gård was so close, but still so far away. And I heard our former party leaders, Maud Olofsson, talk about this feeling, these feelings that everything is so far away. Everyone's making decisions over your head. They're talking about you, but never with you. And she was talking about Sweden as a whole and the agrarian countries, the rural areas. And she was really talking about how her vision was a Sweden that was holding together, that every part of Sweden mattered. It was the first I've ever heard a politician, including me, in its story. And including Vorby Gård in its story for Sweden. It was the first time I heard a politician talk, including me, in the vision of Sweden being something else. That opened my eye for Centerpartiet. And I remember after this year, when I came out of the closet, I decided, I'm going down to their party expedition and I'm going to knock on the door and say, hi, I'm here, I'm going to become a member. So I knocked on the door and this young guy opened the door and said, well, hello. I said, hi, my name is Muharrem, I want to be a member. Chaos happened there. They've never seen anyone coming and knocking on the door and say, hi, I want to become a member. But they made me a member. And it was the best decision that I made. Because I also had a lot of prejudice against Centerpartiet. It's not for me, it's just for farmers, it's for people living in rural areas. But looking back more than 20 years now, I'm ashamed that I had those feelings. Because it was my stereotype of a Centerpartiet that I read about. But when I met Centerpartiet, it was something totally different.
Because that is a lot of Swedes' stereotype of Centerpartiet. It's wearing sort of folk dress. It's, you know, mm-hmm. a folkdräkt, where you sort of traditional outfits at your party. You still do, people still do that at your party meetings, right?
They really do. It's the folkdräkt party of Sweden.
and baked buns, that was the other thing I knew about Centerpartiet.
Well,
That's universal,
you
right?
You will never see a thin Centerpartiet. We love life and everything that comes with it, especially cakes.
And now you've been leader of this party for more than a year. How have you found it?
It's a job that's really interesting every day. It's a job that's fun almost every day. Not every day, but almost every day. And it gives you a toolbox that just a few people in Sweden have. We are a selected few that become party leaders. We're 8 now in Sweden in the parliament. And it comes with responsibility both for your party, but also for Sweden. And waking up every day and realizing that I can't just say anything because it doesn't just reflect badly or good for my party. It will affect how people see on Sweden and what happens in Sweden. You have to think twice before you say something, and you really have to grow as a leader when you become a party leader. But I've heard colleagues saying that they were born to do this. They have always wanted to be party leaders. I wasn't born to do this. I never dreamt of being a party leader when I was a kid in Vårby Gård. I never dreamt about being a party leader when I knocked on that door on Center Party and said, hi, I want to be a member. But I just had the fortunate upbringing from my parents that don't know. They taught me never to be quiet. If you are the annoying one in a party, well, be more annoying. Don't be comfortable. Don't just sit there and be quiet in a corner. Make noise. And that's one of my good things or bad things. It depends on which side you're on. So I've always made noise, and I always spoke my mind, and I always wanted to change things. So I'm just lucky that the members liked me so much that they wanted to see me as a party leader.
In some ways, it's been a difficult year. I mean, in the most recent poll from Novus, you had the lowest public confidence of any party leader. And you started with the confidence of about 4% of voters. You rose briefly to 6% and now back down at around 4%. Your predecessor, Annie Love, she had a similarly difficult mm-hmm. start, but rarely fell below 20% by the end of her tenure. Mm-hmm. What can you do to sort of emulate that kind of journey?
Well, I was part of our difficult journey the last time. We had 2.5 very difficult years, and it was a search for a new identity in our party as well. It was a very interesting period to be a part of Center Party. And now we're in a similar position. The political landscape has changed really fast in Sweden. It's a whole new political landscape that we are playing on. And liberalism, as we know it, is under pressure, not only in Sweden, all over Europe. I think there's two exceptions. It's Poland and Great Britain, where you can see the liberals are, well, with the system, it's hard to to become the leading party in Great Britain. But you still see how the liberals are gaining momentum in those countries. But in the rest of Europe, liberalism is under pressure, really under pressure, and it's hard to be a liberal now. Everyone's searching for the easy answers. Everything is black and white. Everything is polarized. A lot of parties are trying to just sit in the mud and just pulling everyone else down to the mud and said, well, let's sit here and just debate on whose fault it is, who did what 10 or 15 years ago. And liberalism is different to that. Well, it's dark now. It's a lot of problems. It's difficult times for a lot of people. But just if I'm going back to that sailboat, that ship in a stormy sea, even in the most darkest of hours, even when it's most stormy, someone has to look at the horizon and say, well, we're going there. There is something else ahead of us. There is a morning, there is light, there is something that's different from the mud that they are sitting in now. Let's go there. It's difficult now. I know it's storm and it's raining and it's bad weather and it's dark, but there is light there ahead. And we have to find this way, talking about the horizon without sounding naive, without turning our back to the problems that people are meeting today. We have to realize that gang violence is something that is threatening our society as a whole. It's scaring people that are far away from gang violence, shootings and everything else, but it's still making people feeling unsafe all over Sweden. When the trains are delayed or when it's not going all, people are getting annoyed and feeling that Sweden is not working. And when someone comes up and said, hey, you know what? It's their fault. If we hadn't done that 15 years ago, or if we hadn't opened the door for those, these trains would be on time and everything would be so much better and your life wouldn't be so much better. That's what we're up for. And liberalism hasn't found its way on this new playing field. And that's my biggest challenge, to find our place on this new playing field. So it's a search for identity as well. So it's a difficult situation. I know that, but I'm not scared of that because I believe that there's a light in the end of the horizon.
I mean, talking about identity, most recently, the Centre Party has cooperated with the Social Democrats. Mm-hmm. Supporting them when they were in government. But in the latest poll, for Truende Barometer, your voters tend to identify as on the right of centre. And even most of them say they have confidence in the government. How does that work with your strategy of working with parties to the left of centre? And can you see any set of circumstances in which you could work with parties on the right of centre into form a government?
Well, I have cooperated with Moderaterna, Kristdemokraterna and the Liberals in Linköping all my years. I've always supported the former alliance we had in Sweden between the four right parties, right and liberal parties. And I think most of us are comfortable in that situation. But something happened when the Sweden Democrats came in. They shifted focus. We now have a split between conservatives, national conservatives and liberals. And liberals and national conservatives are opposites. I cannot see myself ever cooperating with Sweden Democrats, ever, because they're against everything that's my core values and Centerpartiet's core values. They're against everything. And if you don't keep your core values, well, then you might as well skip politics. Everything that made me become a politician, all of the 110 years of history that my party has had must mean something. Everything that must mean something. And if you just throw them away for being in government with a party that is the opposite of you, well, then you have problems. Then you have to think about what's the meaning of politics. Yes, you have to make changes. You have to be able to compromise. When I was a kid, a young politician as well, compromise was the finest word we had in Sweden. Compromise was a Swedish way. Now, compromise is almost a swear word. If you compromise, you're weak. Everything has to be winning over the other one. My political view is that it's better to compromise and moving forward than to just be able to beat the other one with your solutions. So I would love to see the former alliance come back. When you look at the numbers, it's very difficult to say, well, this is what I believe in. This is what's going to happen.
Together, you're on about, what, 30% or something?
Well, on a good day.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the former alliance, what we call Borgerligheten in Sweden, that's what got defeated. It's not Centerpartiet against the government. Our common project that we worked for 30 years, that's what lost in the elections. And the other three parties, they said, well, let's move forward with a new friend and see if national conservatism is something we can lean on. I will never go that way.
Your party also has some difficulties working sometimes with the left, right?
I know.
In the last cooperation with the Social Democrats collapsed because you wanted to deregulate rents, which is, you know, very sort of, I suppose some people call it a neoliberal policy. It's definitely on the sort of right of economic right of politics, and you're having to cooperate then with parties that go right to the socialist left of politics. That's not an easy cooperation either, right?
No, that's not what I'm promoting as well. I'm not. I can't see Centerpartiet sitting in government with the left parties, with Vänsterpartiet, because we are ideological opposites as well.
But the math doesn't work if they're not there either.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I think one of the biggest challenges that the political system in Sweden has is that we have eight parties, but we only see two solutions. It's stupid to see politics as that. Eight parties and only two solutions. I can see at least 10 solutions just sitting here on how you could find new corporations. And we should learn from other countries, not least Finland, that look at it as a different way. On Monday after election day, political parties should sit down and say, well, hey, this is what the voters lay their votes on. How can we do the best for Sweden in this? Or how can we do the best for Finland, like they said, in this? And let's find solutions forward. Where are most of the voters? Well, they're in the middle. They don't want to be on the left wing or the extreme right wing. They are in the middle. And let's find solutions in the middle. And I think we're coming there because this political stupidity, just having two teams like it's a football game, it's my team or your team, and let's challenge each other. It's not good for Sweden because in a system like that, you always put up what's best for the party and put it against what's best for Sweden. And for me, what's best for Sweden is always number one. But nowadays, we have a lot of parties that are talking about what's best for the party, not for Sweden. And it's not bringing Sweden forward. And what we're missing here is that Sweden as a country is suffering from this. We are not taking Sweden forward. We are stuck in the mud and just challenging each other and throwing mud at each other and sitting there and just fighting over who did what a couple of years ago, pointing fingers instead of just finding a solution forward.
So to put that concrete, so perhaps a grand coalition with the moderates, the Social Democrats, Centerpartiet, would that be a sort of a dream team for you?
Well, when you say it like that, it sounds like super optimistic vision that could never happen. In 60 communes in Sweden, 60 cities out of 290s, Moderaterna and Social Democrats are ruling together. In my hometown, Linköping, Social Democrats and Moderats are steering it together. It's happening all over the country because it happens out of necessity. They see what's what the voters wanted and they are acting on it. It's going to change the political system again. Because if I was in government now, I would look at the numbers and say, hey, this is not working good for us now. If I was a liberal or a Christian Democrat, I would look at the numbers and say, well, I'm not getting much out of it, but I'm losing a lot from it. Is this the best way for Sweden? Is this the best way for our party together? And I would really think about having another go at something else after next election. And I'm hoping that more parties and more people will open their eyes for the solutions instead of the differences that we have.
We've got the European elections coming up soon, and the Centre Party currently has 2 seats in the European Parliament. What issues will you be campaigning on to convince people to vote for your party in June?
We always say that the next election is always the most important ever. I've been there also. I've said, well, this is election is the most important. But this election is really the most important election of them all, because it's an election that will decide our freedom and our security and what Europe will come. So freedom and peace will be one of the biggest issues. And it sounds very big, but it is also very big, because we have parties now all over Europe. And I'm not just talking about Viktor Orban and Hungary. We see now Geert Wilders that won the elections in the Netherlands. He's very open when it comes to supporting Ukraine. He says, we're giving them too much. We should take back the support. And he's very pro-Russian. And what happens if we see more of those parties winning seats in the European Parliament, which is the polls are looking quite depressing when it comes to that. All over Europe, we will see far-right parties gaining momentum. So we can have a European Parliament that will really lean to the extreme right and really lean into pro-Putin. And that's scaring me. So peace and support to Ukraine will be one of our biggest issues. And then, of course, the greatest threat to humanity now, climate change, will be one of our biggest issues. So we will lift climate change as well. And then it sounds kind of pretentious to talk about, but winning former wins again. I'm talking about equality, the right to abortion in Europe. We've won these victories once. And now, 34 years later, we have to win them again. And we're not used to that. But we have to really fight for those issues. Equality, everyone's right to love who they want, be who they want. These are freedom. These are issues of freedom that are core values for Europe and for our continent. And we have to win those victories again. So freedom and climate will be our main issues.
Let's talk now about work permits. This is something that affects a lot of our listeners. And the government last month received the conclusions of an inquiry on raising the threshold for work permits to the median salary, which is 34,200 kroner a month at the moment. What do you think will be the impact on Sweden if this comes into force as planned next June?
We see the impacts already. We don't have to wait for this to go through. We see the impacts already. And they raised the threshold once to 27,000, and now they're raising it again. And we see the impacts. I visited a couple of cities in Sweden where they had to lay off people from care homes, for instance, where they had to send them back. They had been here for a long time. They've worked and paid taxes. Without them, our welfare wouldn't go around. And all of a sudden, just because they have made a couple of thousands less than this threshold, they had to be sent out. So we see the impact now. And when they raise it to 34,200, it's going to be devastating for our welfare system, but also for other companies, not least in the green sector. It will be devastating for them. It's hard to find the labor force as it is. And if you can't get expertise that you want, it's going to hinder you from growing. It's going to make businesses go out of business. It's going to be a really difficult time for Sweden. Not to mention the human cost for those who will be put out of work or maybe even thrown out of Sweden. It's a human catastrophe for those people. I don't even know why this government does this. It's just giving up to Sweden Democrats, because everyone, both public sector and the business sector, is agreeing that this is really stupid politics.
And what will it mean for people who want to come to Sweden to work, who are maybe planning to come?
It's already getting harder. I saw a number that with the old threshold, with 27,000, 25% of the applications were turned down. 25% of the applications for work permit were turned down. What happens when we raise it another 7,000? What happens to those people that want to come to Sweden and work? And this is a highly skilled workforce as well, that want to come to work in Sweden, contribute, pay taxes, be a part of Sweden, and we're not letting them in. At the same time, we have a shortage of labor in Sweden. And I hear what the government says. They're trying to make their case by saying that we have high unemployment in Sweden. They can do this work instead of us getting labor from abroad. If it was that simple, these people would be in work now. They wouldn't be unemployed. But getting someone to work in a restaurant as a chef, or working at a farm or in a hotel, you have to be skilled. You cannot just come in and work as a highly skilled chef in a restaurant without having the skills. You cannot come from unemployment in Sweden and just work as a chef. You need the skills. And the restaurant could educate this person to become a highly skilled chef, but it will take years. And the restaurant doesn't have those years to put up in it. So we need to open more for skilled labor to come to Sweden. And it's a really stupid politic from the government. I cannot for my life understand why they are doing this. It's just symbol politics. It's stupid.
Except there's been pressure to limit labor migration across the political spectrum. And it's really only the Centerpartiet that has been categorically opposed to more limits to labor migration, that's been defending Sweden's liberal labour migration laws. Have you been able to do anything to slow down the progress of this, or to block any parts of it? How have you been working sort of in Parliament to try and affect things?
Well, we're not alone in this. That's the thing. We might be alone in Parliament now, but we used to have friends in Moderaterna, Kristdemokraterna and Liberalerna. We used to agree on this. It was the best for Sweden. It was the best for these people.
They brought these policies in. The Alliance brought these policies
yes,
in. Yeah.
We used to agree on this, and it wasn't an issue. We agreed on everything on this. From the left, it's easy to understand. If you bring in people from other countries, well, you also have to liberalize labor policy in Sweden. And if you are such a good friend with the unions, you don't want to do that. You don't want to liberalize the policies when it comes to labor. I understand why they are against it, but I still can't understand why Moderaterna and Liberalerna is against this. But I'm feeling confident because we have not all the unions, but a lot of the unions with us in this. We have the public sector with us on this. They are screaming at the moment. We need the labor migration. We have the private sector with us fully on this. They don't understand why the Moderaterna is doing this as well. So while I'm alone in the Parliament, I'm not alone thinking this is stupid politics.
Can we move on again and talk a bit about Swedish identity now? Your own Swedishness, has been called into question by Sweden Democrat politicians. And these issues are something that a lot of our listeners will likely recognize from their own lives. And there was an interesting interview with the legendary former footballer Henrik Larsson in The Guardian a few days ago, where he said that he had never really felt 100% Swedish. As the product of a Swedish mother and a foreign father, do you sympathize with him? I mean, do you feel 100% Swedish?
You know, I almost cried when I read that interview with Henrik Larsson, because he's the most Swedish football player that I know. He made a legendary goal in his first game in the World Cup in 94, and he's been present for everyone who loves football in Sweden. He's been our poster boy. When I read those words, it really hurt me. I almost cried when I read that, because it says something about Sweden, what we are becoming now. When someone as Swedish as him says, "I've never really felt Swedish." And he said something else as well in that, when you're nothing, no one cares about you. But when you're something, well, then you're a Swedish. Then they will include you in this. But when you're nothing, well, they will just point fingers and say, well, you're not Swedish. That's also something that we have to take with us, that a lot of kids are growing up in Sweden now, and obviously they're not feeling Swedish. They're not allowed to feel Swedish. And that's also something that scares me, that we have political parties now that are counting on your blood. I've met it myself. I've seen writings on social media from leading Swedish Democrats that are counting on the bloodline of my children. They say, well, Muharrem, he's 50% Swedish because his mother's Swedish and his father's Turkish. His kids are, well, they are 75% Swedish. And I realize they will never stop counting. They will never stop counting the percentage of blood in my kids. And it hurts me, because they can say what they want about me, but all of a sudden they're counting my kids, and my kids are speaking the Östgöta dialect. It's, depending on how you feel about it, could be the best dialect or the worst dialect in Sweden, but it's my kids' dialect, and they know nothing except Sweden and Swedishness. We are in a situation now that a lot of us have to speak up. Sweden belongs to all of us. I am Swedish. I've never known anything else but being Swedish. Well, my father is from Turkey. I have a lot of relatives from Turkey. I love being part of having been brought up with another culture so close to me, another language so close to me. It's made me better, a better person, a better human being. So I love having two cultures like that. But I'm still Swedish. This is the only thing I know. This is my country. And we have to stand up for that now. Someone has to stand up and say, here, but not further.
Mm. And in that interview as well, Henrik Larsson said that his parents had given him his mother's surname to make it easier for him in Sweden. Do you think it would have been easier for you if you'd had your mother's surname growing up and entering politics?
You know how many times I've thought about Muharrem Demirok? could they have done something else? could they have done something else? It's not the easiest name to put on your child, but I'm very proud of my name because it's my granddad's name. So I'm very proud of it. But of course, I understand Henrik Larsson's parents. I understand them. When we gave name to our kids, it took us a long time to decide names, because I didn't want to do the mistake of giving some other name, some Swedish name. Just I wanted to give them international names that would work in the whole world. There's a couple of Swedish names that, it doesn't work if we give them that name in English.
Jerker.
I have a good friend that's named Dick. Sorry. some names that just doesn't work. But we gave them international's name that will work all over the world. That's Turkish, Swedish, English, and Spanish. They will work all over the planet. So I understand Henrik Larsson's parents, but it's still the issue of discrimination, the issue of pointing out who is and who is not Swedish, the issue of not being welcomed. It's scaring me because it's becoming more and more polarized. When I grew up, it wasn't an issue. Everyone was curious about everything. We would ask each other, oh, you're British. Why do you eat this? Why do you do that? What's happening? It wasn't anything bad to ask each other. But nowadays, we're afraid of asking each other questions. Everything is, oh, why do you do? They wonder, but no one ever asks.
Well, okay, in that vein then, you've described yourself as culturally Muslim, and that makes you the first culturally Muslim party leader in Sweden. What do you mean by culturally Muslim?
I'm not a believer. Faith has never found a place in me. I've never believed in God. It's just, I haven't the right soil in me. I don't know what it is. So I haven't found it in me. But I was brought up with parts of the Muslim culture, especially the holidays when I'm talking about that. And in my,
so you celebrated Eid?
And, yes. Yeah. And in my family, it wasn't, it was like Christmas. It is a religious holiday, but still, well, who thinks about the religious part of it anyway? Eid was a time to meet the relatives, going home to my aunt and eating. And when you were full, she said, "What, you haven't eaten anything? Take some more." That's the memories I have, meeting relatives from all over Sweden. We were getting together in a couple of 2 days a year. It was something that really mattered to me. I'm proud of those cultural aspects of it. And I don't want to let go of them. They are part of me, and I want my kids to have a part of that as well, meeting families and friends, having those warm feelings about it. But when it comes to faith, it's not in me. But like I also said in one interview, my life would have been so much easier if I've never talked about cultural Muslim. But it would have been denying a part of myself, and it would have been denying what a lot of Swedes think of themselves today.
How do you react then to the worsening rhetoric about Muslims from Swedish politicians? With Richard Jomshof, for example, who we've mentioned earlier, he called Muhammad a mass murderer, and Jimmie Åkesson recently called for some mosques to be demolished. Mm-hmm. How do you react to that?
Well, it's polarizing Sweden. It's really polarizing Sweden. And it's pointing out to kids that are growing up, maybe like me, not feeling that they're believing in God, but they have a cultural context that are including them. And when they hear that they are part of an Islamist conspiracy, they are here to take over Sweden, they are pushing back Swedes, it does something to those kids. They're not feeling Swedish. They are being pushed out, and it's polarizing Sweden. But what's even sadder is that it's not only the Sweden Democrats that are doing that now. We're seeing it in Moderaterna, we're seeing it in the Christian Democrats, and we're seeing liberals being quiet. And that's making me really sad, because we used to agree on this as well. Sweden was a country where we included everyone who wants to be a Swede. It was a country where everyone was welcome. And now we're pointing fingers and saying, are you really Swedish? The Prime Minister, for instance, said that people who have become Swedish citizens are not as likely as born Swedes to want to protect Sweden if the worst happens and we go to war. And I thought, what is he saying? Why is he saying that? Why is he even pointing that out? It's wrong for the first but also why? What's the idea of bringing that up? Why do you need, as a prime minister, your job is to unite this country, not divide it. And that's what he did with just those small words. Kids growing up feeling that they want to be a police or a nurse or a doctor or whatever, or feeling that he's making theories about my willingness to support my country, to defend my country, and making issues that I don't want to do that because of my upbringing. And that's making me really, really sad.
That's all for this bonus episode of Sweden in Focus, which was recorded on the 7th of March. Thank you to our guest, Muharrem Demirok. Our panelist was James Savage. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. I'm Paul O'Mahony, and we'll be back on Wednesday with Sweden in Focus Extra, where this week we shine a light on the upcoming European elections. Sweden in Focus is a podcast from The Local Europe. The publisher is James Savage.
Thank you. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.